I'm not sure, but I don't know if anybody remembers. I don't know what happened a few years ago. It was quite a few years ago, actually. But the church, as well as everyone else, kind of went nuts with angels. And bookstores and people started talking about angels and started asking about angels. What was funny was that the world began to wonder about angels. And I found myself kind of at a loss to try to talk to people about angels. Because you know what? We don't know much about them, do we? All we know is that they're there. We can't see them, and we don't preach about it. We don't teach about it because simply the Bible doesn't tell us a lot, you know, about them. And so you can have these innocuous conversations. And some of the pictures of angels are absolutely ridiculous. You know, some of those little winged cherubs like that, are they anything that we would have to fear? You know, I don't see a little guy like that telling me to fear not. You know, but I'm just saying that that's the thing, is we don't know much about them at all. But I believe that while angels may be different from human beings, they were still created just like us. And I believe they were created in God's image also. And that they were created to have a relationship with God. You and I were created for one reason and one reason alone, to walk with Him and talk with Him. Angels, I believe, were too. I don't know if they have legs. I don't know if it's a walk or a talk or a fly. I'm not 100% sure. But I believe that they were created for the same purpose, to have fellowship with God, to walk and to talk. And I don't know if our guardian angels, we're promised that we have at least one. We probably have more than one. And there's probably some special people like me who have a whole platoon. But I wonder if they ever have to report back what they've learned from the human creature that they're taking care of. One angel was talking to God about her creature, a beautiful but troubled young woman struggling in her pain to live a productive life. She'd grown from the throes of her past pains and habits and was well on her way to recovery. She's made all the healing choices, Father. But now that she's beginning to share her story with others to help those who have the same, she's hurting again. She's crying more at night, and her anger is returning. The other night, she came close to indulging in her addiction again. I don't understand, Father. She made the choices. Shouldn't she be happier? And the voice came back from her loving Father that said she would. She would be if she were doing these things for the right reason. She believes the help she gives others will somehow set her right. She believes that the help she's trying to give others will make up for everything that happened in the past. And worst of all, she's thinking that I will like her better if she does. So we've come to the final healing choice, number 8. And I find myself back in the position as I was last week of having to put in a couple of disclaimers. I'm going to help you a little bit with the nuts and bolts, and then we'll talk a little bit more about what should be behind the nuts and bolts. And I want you to forgive me if Zachariah have come across that just making these choices, just doing the nuts and bolts of these choices, are going to make a real difference in our lives. It has to be for the right reason. We have to go back to that very first choice and to understand that we have nothing good in and of ourselves. Blessed are the poor in spirit. They've got nothing. We got nothing. Lord, I have nothing. My life is unmanageable, and I need to turn it over to you. We have to come to it with the right motive. Making the healing choices is not a way to make it right. It's not a way to weigh out the cosmic balance of the damage that all of my hurts and my habits and my hang-ups have caused in the past. It isn't going to happen. You'll find that out real quick when you go to make the house cleaning choice and you go to make amends with people. If there's somebody that you've really hurt, they're going to let you know that you can't make up for this with an apology. And when they say that, you tell them, I know, you're absolutely right. Nothing will make up for this. But we make the choices for the motive. We make the choices to be able to be healthy. And the final choice, the very final choice, is the worst thing that we could do by making all 7 choices is to close our doors and our windows and hunker down and try to continue to live and make these choices without having to be out there and to share. It's the worst thing that we can do. Number 8 is known as the sharing choice. I yield myself to be used by God to bring this good news to others, both by my example and by my words. There comes a point in time to where we begin to live a life that's healthy enough to be able to reach out to others. You can call this witnessing. You can call it evangelizing. You can call it whatever you want. But there comes a time when we have to share the good news. How many here have good news to share since we've been on this journey? This choice, you got to make the choice to do it. You have to make the choice to be able to do it. We can call it recycling our pain. Healing Choices calls it recycling our pain. I don't like that word. I like redeeming. In this choice, God will redeem our pain. He'll redeem every bit of our pain as we begin to reach out to others and know what we are here to do and know what we share. It's based on a couple of Beatitudes, but the Beatitude that it bases its most on is, "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Put it this way, blessed are those who go through pain for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. What's real interesting, though, what's very interesting, is that when he says this beatitude, he's already said that there's one other person that is blessed and gets the kingdom of heaven. Which one is it? The one who made the first choice. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And remember, why theirs is the kingdom of heaven is because they've emptied themselves of the notion that they're good enough to be in the kingdom. They've emptied themselves of the notion that they can earn the kingdom. They've emptied themselves completely of that notion, and they've come to God with an open hand. And whenever we do that, God then can fill us. Our problem is that we keep from being filled because we keep bringing these dirty rags to Him. We keep bringing these what-ifs and maybes to Him. I know I'm bad, Lord, but I've been trying to do good here, and we continue to bring that to Him. And He says, I can't fill you. You've got it filled with all this stuff. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. See, we live by a different set of rules. On this planet, we earn what we get. Everybody does. We earn what we get. If something has been done bad to us, we probably earned it. And unfortunately, on this planet, the way that we pay back is that we do just as bad to them as they did to us. This planet says might makes right. The rules that make up this planet are a survival of the fittest. Only the strong survive. And I'll try to be good up and only to a point, and that is when you decide to be bad to me. Well, now you've given permission for me to be bad now, and all I have to do is be badder than you, and I'm going to be all right. Well, it works on this planet. It doesn't work at all in the kingdom of heaven. It's more than just the opposite. It's the poor in spirit that get. It's the people who admit. It's the people who confess. It's the people who come and say, I got nothing. I can't pay for this. There's no way I can earn this. Father says, now we're talking. Let me fill you up. Let me fill you up. Because he goes on to say after this, he says, blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad. What? Are you kidding? Right there, we know that we've got to be playing by a different set of rules, because if that were to happen to us and we were only playing by the earth's rules, we were only playing by the world's rules, then there's no way that you rejoice. Right? If I've got persecution and revilement and all these things happening to me, and by the way, I didn't do anything. There's no way you rejoice. What do you do on this planet? You go get justice. You go get revenge. So we know immediately that there's something else going on here. We say on this planet, justice then has to prevail. Avail myself of the justice system. I had something happen to me, so I'm going to make sure that I am availed in the justice system. The kingdom doesn't work that way. These disciples that Jesus are speaking to, each and every one of them, they live by another set of rules. They don't look for justice. They look for mercy. And they actually believe that by giving mercy, they are giving justice, which just doesn't compute on this planet, does it? If you allow me another analogy, they play the game for a different reason. Well, they play to win. May not be a different reason. They play to win, but they redefine winning. They don't win by making someone else lose. They don't win by beating somebody else. They don't win by beating their enemies. They win by attempting to make their enemies their friends. They say that if martyrdom is what it takes, then these guys, they say, all right, if that's what it takes, that's what I'll do. Greater love has no one than one who will lay down his life for a friend. So I'd like to review one other, before we go on though, one other beatitude, and that was one that we talked about last week. Blessed are the pure in heart. And this is what I said, is that when we get to this choice, you're going to have to check your motive for sharing. I want you to share. I want to share. Well, you know, sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But you should share, but there's only two times that you should share. You should share when you feel like it, and you should share when you don't feel like it. Right? There's only two times you should go to church. There's only two times you should go to your meetings. There's only two times that you should go to your small group is when you feel like it and when you don't feel like it. But I want to be able to share, but you can't do it for the wrong reason. If we do it for the wrong motive, then the healing choices will do nothing for us. And I guarantee you, we will be back worse off than when we started. Ask anybody in recovery who's trying to make up for all the bad that they did. They'll be in the throes of their addiction so quick because they realize that they can't do it, and they lose hope, and they go back to the very things that got them there. It'll happen with us too. It always happened. So remember, blessed are the pure in heart, right? And I talked about prayer. I talked about prayer last week. But giving is the same rules. Why is it you pray? Okay? You don't pray to look good in front of other people. The Pharisees used to walk and pray in public because people were so impressed with the way they prayed. And you don't do it to find favor with God. He said, don't heap up empty phrases because the pagans do that with their gods because they think that they'll find favor. Or the words or how eloquent you are, God will like your prayers better. Remember what we said last week? What are you going to do from now on when you pray? Just what? Just talk to him. Are you worried about your words? No. Speak to him. Talk to him. What's on your heart? Right? Do the same with giving. And that's what he's saying here. Beware of practicing your piety before others in order to be seen by them, for then you have no reward from your Father who's in heaven. The Pharisees used to give the same way. They used to walk out in public, and people used to gather around just to watch them give. Yeah? And soon it became the reason. I love the image of the story that everyone's watching the Pharisees give, and Jesus is watching this one widow. I picture all the eyes watching the Pharisees stepping up there, and Jesus is just sitting up there just watching this one widow. And nobody even knows she's there. So it's the same reason. You don't give in order to be impressed, or in order to impress people. If that's the reason you're doing it, Jesus says, congratulations, you have your reward. But don't expect your Father to reward you. And also, you don't do it to find favor with God. The more we give doesn't mean he's going to like us anymore. Why? Because you've already found favor with God. Amen? Each and every one of you. So before we get to the nuts and bolts of sharing, you got to remember our motive. Why are we doing it? We're empty. We're completely, absolutely empty. And when we become completely, absolutely empty, he has promised to fill us. To fill us with how much? With everything. The kingdom of heaven. It's ours. So these are the nuts and bolts of sharing. He said, because there's another myth out there, and the myth is that you can only share if you're strong. You can only share if you have a testimony of strength. You can only share if you've truly overcome. You can only share if you're extraordinary. And there's the myth right there, is that God uses only extraordinary people to witness for him. Remember the testimonies? Some of the testimonies that we've heard? Wow, you look and go, man, oh man. Listen to what God did for that person. But we get the idea that those are special people. Those are extraordinary people. Do you remember in the Patriarch series when we went through the covenant? Remember what we came to conclude? That Abraham wasn't special? There wasn't anything special about him. What made Abraham special? God chose him even though he wasn't special, right? And that's the thing about the patriarchs. You have to understand that in sharing, you have to understand that God uses only ordinary people. As a matter of fact, God does his best, not with strong people. In fact, it's strong people that give God the most headaches. It's weak people who share better than anyone else. Are you with me? Isn't that what our scripture reading said? He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. So I'll boast all the more gladly of my what? Of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. And when you're sharing, that's what needs to come across. And you don't share the power of Christ in your strength. Isn't that what Paul is saying? You don't share the power of Christ in our strength. We share the power of Christ when we're what? When we're weak. When we're weak. So now you know why testimonies are given by strong people. Is it easier to get up here and talk to you about my strength, or is it easier to get up here and talk to you about my weaknesses? You see? Unfortunately, the strong people are the ones that get the press because they like talking about themselves. But when I need to talk to you about my weaknesses, when somebody is brave enough to stand up and talk about their weaknesses and tell people how they don't have it all together and how they are losers at times more than they are winners, now you're talking about strength. And this also is the strength that really helps people too. My grace is sufficient for you, he said. And what he's implying, what God is implying to Paul is that if you didn't have this weakness, I wouldn't be able to deal with you. We all know what Paul was before, right, on the road to Damascus. What did it take for God to get his attention? Knock him off his horse. Blind him for 3 days. Well, I'm sorry, but if Paul can only then share in his strength, God pretty much is going to have to kill him before he's going to do it from here on out. Paul's not going to last too long if this is the way that he's got to get his attention. He's going to end up in the hospital. You see where we're going? People are not helped by our strengths. Now, I don't know your opinion, but sometimes I'll be honest with you that I am much more moved when somebody will stand up and give their testimony about their weakness than I am about their strength. As a matter of fact, when I hear it about their strength, I'm not moved at all. As a matter of fact, I begin to feel inadequate. At worst, at best, struggling people just shrug off stories of victory and strength. They just shrug it off. At worst, it makes them feel worse. And it gives a false picture of what it truly means to be healed, of what it truly means to live a life worth witnessing about. I hear that guy give that testimony, and my first thought is, well, I'll never, ever be like that. Ever. Why try? You see? Because people that are struggling, they hear testimonies of strength, and they know that they don't have what it takes, and they know that they never will. It reminds them of how useless they are. They envy those who seem not to struggle. So in a way, when we get up and we give testimonies about our strength, we make it worse. We make it worse for people who are struggling. John Baker, who's the author of Healing Choices, and the founder of Celebrate Recovery Ministries, he shares with us that he says that when I share my testimony, people come and they thank me for my openness and my honesty. They don't thank me for my strength. They don't thank me for living clean and sober for the past 25 years. They don't even talk about that. They thank me for my honesty. And the thing was, because he says, I don't have a testimony about my strength. I can't give a testimony about my strength, he said, because I have none. Blessed are the poor in spirit. So this is why our healing choice is known as recycling our pain or redeeming our pain. Now, we don't have a lot of time to talk about pain. Why pain? If there's one subject in the history of all Christian ethics, it always comes down to why pain? Why do bad things happen to good people? And why do good things happen to bad people? Anybody here have the answer? I didn't think so. I was hoping that one person would be here. But real quick, let's just try this, just a superficial brush. Maybe sometime this year y'all want to go through the book of Job, where you really want to get into it. Okay, all right. It's on our preaching calendar, okay? Sometime this year we're going to go through the book of Job. But for tonight, for today, we'll just say, we are created with what? Created with free will. If everybody has free will, then they have the choice on whether to do right or to do wrong. And they have the choice on whether to do right or wrong to other people. We may not like it, but God respects everyone's free will up front, no matter what they're going to do with that free will. Because if he doesn't, then they don't really have free will, do they? And in the great controversy, this is the one accusation that Satan brings to God first. You did not truly create us with free will. We do not have the ability to love. So we don't have to live this way. That's the great foundation of the great controversy. I used to ask the question in Sabbath school classes, is there anything that means more to God about you than your salvation? Is there anything? Yes, one thing. Your free will. Because if my salvation meant more to him than anything else, then he would override my free will in order to save me. Right? And does he ever do that? No. So you got to have free will. Got to have free will. Unfortunately, he left us our free will after we took on sinful nature. So our ability to do good is now out the window. And chances are, before I could get my nature under any sort of godly control, I probably hurt somebody with it before it happened. And here we go. Now you have the problem of what? Now you have the problem of pain. And by the way, this is not what you tell people who are hurting. People who are hurting do not want to hear an ethics lecture about free will. And they especially don't want to hear that whoever assaulted them is respected by God in his free will, right? That's not what they want to hear. So I'm just saying, I know this is true, but it isn't always appropriate to talk to people who are hurting this way, right? This is just a way for us to be able to look at it. We corrupted that free will with a sinful nature, so guilty and innocent people suffer, don't they? Right? Guilty and innocent people suffer. And guilty and innocent people sometimes don't suffer. Who are we leaving that up to? We're leaving it up to God and what he can do. See, this is why forgiveness to people who have wronged us with their choices is required, along with being forgiven by the ones we wronged. You see? On the planet, the problem with our sinful nature on the planet is that there is no recourse for this to stop. I hurt somebody, they hurt me back a little worse. I hurt them back a little worse. That's the problem with our sinful nature on this planet. There is no stopping point. Well, there is one. It's called murder. You see? If something doesn't put this in check, if Simon and I got a problem and something doesn't happen, one of us is going to end up dead. Because it's the only way for a single sinful nature person to be happy. You get it? This is why healing choice is trying to get us to live by the kingdom of heaven, because that isn't the kingdom of heaven's rules. Jesus comes and he intercedes. He shoots a missile into this horrible cycle of vengeance and revenge and everything else. And mercy all of a sudden hits it and it begins to ripple out. Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do. And he gives us new rules to live by. But as far as pain, just remember what God can do with our pain. Remember what can be done with our pain. And hopefully you get just a little different view of what your pain looks like. Number one, he can use it to get our what? How many here are willing to confess that if their life was absolutely perfect, they probably after a while wouldn't find a reason to pray anymore? I'll admit it. I'll confess it. If my life were absolutely perfect, okay, pretty soon I get to going along, and pretty soon I'm beginning to think, well, you know, I have been making all the healing choices, so, you know, of course my life is better, right? And the more and more that I do that, the further and further away I get from depending on who? On God. And do we remember the first choice? We're supposed to be depending on Him. So the amazing thing is that God takes the... And by the way, this is not something you share with somebody who's hurting either, okay? But the amazing thing about God is that He takes the one product of this planet, the very first product of this planet, pain, and He decides He's going to be able to use it to our good and to His good. Again, you don't tell somebody who's hurting that, oh, by the way, God created this pain in order to get your attention. No, that's not what we say. It's what we talk about in an academic setting, okay, in a preaching setting. But He can use it to get our attention, can't we? He's decided that that's what He will use. I've talked to you before about Dr. Paul Brand, orthopedic surgeon that Philip Yancey writes extensively about. Orthopedic surgeon who probably pioneered, absolutely pioneered the work amongst leprosy patients. Most of the procedures still have his name on it. And he was a medical student in the 40s. He built two leprosariums and a hospital and a medical college all in India over his long, long career. But in his book, Soul Survivor, Yancey talks about Dr. Brand. He says, Brand's career centered on perhaps the most problematic aspect of creation, the existence of pain. I was writing the book, Where is God When It Hurts? He invited me to consider an alternative to a world without pain. He insisted on pain's great value, holding it up as proof, the terrible results of leprosy, damaged faces, blindness, loss of fingers and toes and limbs, all of which occur as side effects of painlessness, not leprosy itself. As a young doctor in India, Brand made this groundbreaking medical discovery that leprosy does its damage merely by destroying nerve endings. People who lose pain sensation then damage themselves by such simple actions as gripping a splintered rake or wearing tight shoes. Pressure sores form, infection sets in, and no pain signals alert them to tend the wounded area. I saw such damage firsthand in Dr. Brand's clinics. I thank God for pain, Brand declared with the utmost sincerity. I cannot think of a greater gift I could give my leprosy patients. He went on to describe the intricacies of the pain system that protects the human body. It takes firm pressure on a very sharp needle for the sole of the foot to feel pain, whereas the cornea of the eye senses 1/1,000th as much pressure, calling for a blink reflex when a thin eyelash or just a speck of dust brushes the surface. Intestines do not sense pain from being cut or burned, dangers these internal organs do not normally confront, yet they send out the urgent pain signal of colic when they become distended. We doctors experience a rude awakening after medical school, Brand continued. After studying the marvels of the human body, suddenly I was thrust into a position like the complaint desk of a department store. Not one person ever visited my office to express appreciation for a beautifully functioning kidney or lung. They came to complain that something wasn't working properly. Only later did I realize that the very things they complained about were their greatest allies. People view pain as an enemy, yet as my leprosy patients prove, it forces us to pay attention to threats against our bodies. Without it, heart attacks, strokes, ruptured appendices, stomach ulcers would all occur without warning. Who would ever visit a doctor apart from pain's warnings? I noticed that the symptoms of illness my patients complained about were actually a display of bodily healing at work. Virtually every response of our bodies that we view with irritation or disgust, blister, callus, swelling, fever, sneeze, cough, vomiting, diarrhea, especially pain, demonstrates a reflex toward health. And all these things normally considered enemies, we can find a reason to be grateful. So it gets our attention. After that, it teaches us what? Teaches us to depend on Him. Paul, how many times did Paul say he prayed to have that thing taken away? You know? I'm not saying that God rejoices with our pain. I'm not saying that at all. But anytime you walk into the prayer closet, it's a good day for God. And if I'm coming in with a complaint, He doesn't ask. He doesn't say, oh, you're here to complain again? Damn, I was hoping you would be here to praise me. No, all He asked for us to what? To come to Him. Come to me. All you are heavy laden with burdens and with pain. I'm just saying that for a God who created a man just to walk with Him and talk with Him, He'll take anything He gets. He rejoices to see you. He doesn't rejoice that you're hurting, but He rejoices that you're in His presence, and He wants to comfort us. He wants to give us something to rejoice about. I'm saying a Pharisee like Paul, that had been absolutely no way he would have ever come to God to pray the way that he prayed had he not been blind, had he not had this, had he not gone through whatever he went through. And when Paul boasts about all the things that happened to him, I don't think he's boasting because he's saying, well, I'm more persecuted than you are, so I'm better off than you are. No. I think he's rejoicing for all those things that happened to him because he sent him running right into the lap of God. And Paul is free to admit, saying, if it were up to me, I never would have done it. So it teaches us to depend on Him. It also then gives us what? It gives us a ministry for others. Did you ever think that one day, possibly, that the worst thing about you could ever be used as a ministry to others? This is what it means to have our pain recycled or redeemed. This is what it means, is to give a ministry to others. I'm only here because somebody finally told me that he wanted somebody to see. They wanted somebody to see behind their Sabbath facade. He wanted somebody to see behind the mask. He needed somebody to know that the facade was ready to crack. He needed somebody to listen to him, that I don't know what I'm doing. And then I was able to respond back, well, I don't know what I'm doing either. Maybe we can do it together. Brave people who go against the system, because church does not give that system. Church does not readily open itself to say, come on, tell us about your weaknesses. No, church is a place where we're tempted to talk about nothing but our strengths. I know one alcoholic who says, people don't talk about the right things in church. He says, I go to church and I feel absolutely inadequate because I can go for months before somebody else will admit that they're depending on God for something. And when you hear that in church, when you hear somebody say, hi, I'm Quinn, I'm a sinner in the need of grace, and I need somebody else to stand with me. So this is how you share. This is how your pain would be recycled. How many here have struggled in church knowing what to do with God or for God? How many have wanted to do a ministry, wanted to truly help God, but never knew what to do or how to do it? And every ministry that you tried, it just didn't seem to work out. Begin to think about whatever pain you've gone through. And you may find a ministry that would be the most fulfilling ministry you've ever had. Helping someone else go through what you've been through. Now, I will warn you, we got to work it out a little bit before we can do it too. Right? An alcoholic one day sober is not ready yet. Somebody who's only taken the first step is not ready yet. You understand what I'm saying? But when we work through these, when we make the healing choices and we work through this, pretty soon I know that we will be standing strong enough to be able to, well, actually standing weak enough to be able to go and to help somebody else. I'd like to see church become a conduit of that rather than an obstacle someday. So what you got to do is you got to tell your story. And when you tell your story, remember three things. Be humble. How does arrogance in a story sound to people who are struggling? By the way, how does strength in a story sound to people who are struggling? We already went over that, right? They quit listening because they think that you're so strong that, there's nothing here for me because I'll never get there. So we've got to be humble. And we don't save people. We don't point people to Christ by sidling up to them from some sort of standpoint of moral superiority. In fact, Ellen White said that somewhere. It's an apocryphal quote. It's a quote that I've never seen in print. But there's this quote where she said, "No one was ever won to Christ through a position of moral superiority." You know how they're won to Christ? By fellow sinners. By starving people who just know where the bread is. So be humble. Be real. We've got to be real. We think sometimes that if we talk too much about the pain that came before, we think, well, am I condoning my actions? Do I make it, well, if you make it sound fun, well, I don't know. But all I'm saying is that you got to be real. Because that's what you're asking other people to be. You have to be authentic. You have to be real. And this was my point that I was talking before. God's not looking for us to get better before we can come to Him. He's just wanting us to be authentic. To be able to confess, I got nothing. And when I do, then He can fill me. And above all, don't ever what? Don't ever lecture. Don't ever lecture. Something happens to us after we go and we start to walk with God for a while. If we don't put that selfishness in check, pretty soon our selfishness becomes sanctified. And then we think that we can lecture people. You know? Well, I haven't struggled with this in a month and you're still struggling with it? No. And we forget where we came from. And we forget that we were there once. I don't think God ever wants us to forget where we came from. Because the second we do, we'll end up lecturing people, we'll end up trying to win them from moral superiority. And I have to tell you, the number one complaint against the church, especially in North America, is just that. They don't see a place where they can come and be real. They don't see a place where they can come and be a sinner and be welcome and have God do something with them. Because the church is standing at the outside of the door saying, "You're not welcome until you get this together." So don't ever lecture. And if there's one thing that I want you to carry with you through this whole thing, is whatever pain you're going through, believe it. Believe someday God will never waste it. I'm not saying that you're going to turn it into an international ministry of recovery. I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying that you're ever going to see the results of helping other people out. But I will say this, that you have to believe that God will never, ever waste your pain. So share your story. Because the only way that you continue to wear the mask, the only way that we don't take the healing choices that we're supposed to take, is that either we don't share it, we'll continue to wear the mask, we don't want to talk to people about our problems. We begin to put up excuses of why we talk about them. You ever wonder how some of the people in the Bible feel that their worst moments are published in the most popular book in the history of human literature? And that for the past 6,000 years, people who they don't even know have been reading about their worst moments. I think a lot of them are glad they're dead. But I'm not 100% sure, but I think that somewhere down the line they made a decision to do that. You know, somewhere down the line that they knew that, I don't know, I'm not sure, I'm not 100% sure, but I'd like to think that somewhere down the line God came to him and said, "David, your story is going to help a lot of people, man. Not your story about killing Goliath, but your story about Bathsheba. Because there's going to be a lot of adulterers and a lot of murderers are going to read this story, and they're going to feel that they've got hope because I still called you the apple of my eye. Do you mind if I share it? And I'm sure David said, yeah, go ahead. Story of Jonah. You know, if someone else wrote the book of Jonah, that's a sad, sad, sad story. But if Jonah wrote it, you know what it is, right? It's his confession. It's his confession of how big an idiot he was and how hard his heart really was that day. That he cared whether or not the tree died because it gave him shade, but he cared absolutely nothing for thousands and thousands of Ninevites perishing. If Jonah wrote that story, I believe that he left it right there and said, there's my confession. I hope it helps somebody. Ecclesiastes, Solomon's confession. Notice Ecclesiastes, nothing about Solomon's strength or his wisdom or anything else. It's all about how he failed. You got to believe that your story will help somebody, and God will never waste your pain. He'll never waste your hurt. Don't do it for the wrong motive either. Don't do it to find favor with people. I know some people, there are some people in recovery that they say, I'm weak, look at me. Because they actually believe that they're saved by walking through the steps. They believe they're saved by walking through the choices. They're saved by choices. Don't do it to find favor with men, and don't do it to find favor with God. See, there's no way, no matter what happens to us, there's no matter how good our life becomes, that we'll ever be able to make up the damage that we've done to other people and to God. And that's not what he's asking us to do. There's no more horrible question for a life lived than for somebody to be constantly looking over their shoulder at a disappointed God saying, is this enough? I'm tired. Is this enough? Pastor Ralph can tell you, and I can tell you, that in our years, we've spent too many times on deathbeds with good, good Adventist people worried that they're not going to be saved. Because they don't know if they confessed every sin. They can remember when their times when they didn't kneel when they prayed. That desperation turns to frustration, turns to resentment, finally turns to a hardened heart that it isn't going to happen no matter what now. So make the choices and do it, but remember why you're making them. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for they will receive the kingdom of heaven. Thank you for going on this journey with us. And I continue to pray for you in your journey, in your choices journey. Whether you're in a group or not, if you'd like to start a group, let me know. We can go through this. We won't be able to do it with the sermon. We can go through this again. If you're hearing good things about what's happening in the group and you'd like to start, if you haven't heard anything what's going on in the group, I'll point them out to you. Grady leads one. Okay. Ed leads one. Talk to them. Ask them how it's going. But I wish you all God's peace in this journey, no matter when you take it, and continue to make it. And remember that we're one day closer. We're one day closer to having our pain redeemed forever. And we're one day closer where God will come back and give us that nature back, give us that ability back, that ability to love by nature and not hurt by nature the way we do now. Let's pray. Father, I want to thank you so much for this day, this opportunity, always to be able to look at what you have in mind for us and the beautiful comfort that we can walk this perilous walk, but indeed you are with us always, even to the end of the age. I ask that everybody know that everybody feel that today, and I ask that you bless this family, you lift them close to you, that you bless them with all that they have. Keep them from harm, Lord, and from temptation. And just draw them closer. Bring us back again at your appointed time. We ask this all in Jesus' name. Amen.